Hello and welcome to this episode of the 21cc podcast, brought to you by the Chartered Institute of Building. I'm Nadine Badu, editor of CM People.
And I'm Justin Stanton, editor of CM Digital.
Today we're discussing mental health in construction. So a warning to our listeners that this discussion includes references to suicide and substance abuse. In this episode, we'll hear from an experienced construction professional who is sharing his incredible journey of carving out a successful career while dealing with long-term mental ill health. I'll also be speaking to the CEO of the Federation of Master Builders, Brian Berry, about the work the industry still needs to do to remove the stigma around mental health. Today's discussion marks World Mental Health Day, which takes place on the 10th of October every year. So it feels like a rather timely reminder of the importance of good mental health. But before we dive into the interviews, Justin, can you give us a bit of background on World Mental Health Day? You know, what's it about and why does it matter?
World Mental Health Day started in 1992 as a day for global mental health education, awareness and advocacy against social stigma. It was created and is led by the World Federation for Mental Health. And that's not some millennial thing. It was founded in 1948. Its first president was an army doctor who had survived World War I. With Ukraine, Gaza, and the systematic dismantling of democracies throughout the world, it's no surprise that the theme for this year's World Mental Health Day is overwhelm when global events and relentless bad news becomes too much.
There are many causes of stress and poor mental health, but naturally, we're concentrating on mental health in construction. Now, CIOB issued its latest report, Understanding Mental Health in the Built Environment, earlier this year. So, Justin, what were some of the key findings?
The report is a stark reminder that mental health in construction is a silent crisis. Nearly 900 people in construction responded to the survey. Fully 94% experienced stress, 83% experienced anxiety, and 60% experienced depression. Perhaps most worryingly, 27% experienced suicidal thoughts. The respondents highlighted the factors contributing to moderate and extreme levels of stress: too much work, poor communication, poor planning, unrealistic deadlines, and inadequate staffing. That list unfortunately reflects systemic issues in construction's operating model. Indeed, the CIOB emphasises that the large number of SMEs that make up the sector and the unacceptable payment practices that are still rife can contribute to poor mental health. Other factors that are commonplace in construction: limited term contracts, time away from family, the macho culture, and the uncertainty of future work contribute as well. In the 5 years since the previous CIOB mental health report, the frequencies of stress, anxiety, fatigue, poor concentration, and feeling overwhelmed have all increased substantially. And from an admittedly low base, the number of respondents reporting suicidal thoughts has increased as well. The CIOB noted the significant increase in levels of poor concentration and the impact that can have. I quote, "Poor concentration can be seen as an amber warning if left unresolved, as prolonged poor well-being can lead to serious health problems. A large proportion of respondents are in middle management or junior management positions and are therefore more likely to be providing on-site supervision as well as ensuring all activities complying with building codes and safety regulations. If an individual struggles to concentrate while at work, they are more likely to not catch mistakes being made and make mistakes themselves. This can result in higher health and safety risks if the checks and balances are not correct for both those constructing and for those using the built asset."
The CIOB also detailed measures being taken to address mental health, didn't it?
That's right. Notably, more than three quarters of respondents stated that their organisation has conducted awareness raising activities, while more than half reported that their organisation offers helplines and mental health first aiders. The CIOB sets out an 8-point list of actions that companies should take to help address the silent crisis, notably signing up to the Mental Health at Work commitment, implementing policies that support the workforce, in particular regular one-to-one check-in meetings, fostering trust by being open, and management training in identifying and managing poor mental health. The report includes links to helpful resources such as the Samaritans, Mates in Mind, the Lighthouse Charity, and the CIB's own Assist service.
Thanks so much, Justin. We'll also include links to those useful resources on the Construction Management website. Joining us now is Dorian Bowen, who is a founder of Project One, a multi-award-winning design and build studio based in Penarth, but working globally. Dorian is an advocate of better industry standards and raising awareness of mental health. Dorian, thank you so much for joining the podcast. It's good to see you.
It's a pleasure to be here, Nadine. Thank you for inviting me.
So to begin with, construction is seen as this really high pressure environment. When did you personally first start to notice that it was having an impact on your mental health?
I really had to bottom out. And it's my experience of this stuff has been, this is the only life that I know. So my experiences and my emotions and my coping strategies are the only thing that I know. And one of the things I found prevalent is I don't appreciate that people are having a different human experience to me. So the time that I noticed that something was awry, It was, I'm not going to say too late, because obviously I'm sort of here today, but there were no markers that could have said that this, choosing this career path and choosing this particular path within this career is going to have a significant effect on your mental health. And I honestly can't say, looking back, that if I'd done something, if I decided to be a small holder in the country with zero pressure, that there also wouldn't have been consequences from the things that life put towards me. But for me, it was sort of at the very top of my career. And it was at the point where my coping strategies had been altered from internal ones. And a lot of my upbringing was, there's nothing wrong, you'll be fine. And I'd always tried to discuss these things from a really young age. And I felt around the age of 6 that something was not quite right. And I didn't seem to be having the same experience as a lot of the other people that I was around. And that was a repeated theme. And I just constantly had the thing that there's nothing wrong with you, you'll be all right, and that sunny optimistic. And then it was around 2019 when we were at the sort of peak of our career. I was traveling internationally on a weekly basis. And I had what a lot of people would term a dream career and a dream life. I had all the things that my extremely low self-esteem had convinced me that if I got, I could be happy and be sane and be able to have the life that I thought that I wanted in those terms. So it was, for me, my veneer of mental health, the things that I presented to the outside world in order to be able to cope, and the lack of depth and clarity with which I operated internally, just sort of snapped. Incidentally, that wasn't the rock bottom. It sort of got me to a point where I had to sort of confront, what is going on with me? What is happening? Why can I not cope with these life situations in the way that other people do? Why am I using external sources to bring myself peace of mind? And that was the thing I also didn't understand. I didn't understand that peace of mind was a really important thing. So it was pretty late for me, yeah. The anxiety had been building up for about 3 or 4 years, and I would regularly go to the doctor, and I'd be like, look, I literally feel like there's something parked on my chest. I was working 18 hours a day, and my holidays, because we had projects in other countries, my holidays become work trips. And they did feel like a holiday at the time. I was like, I'm getting to do what I love. I'm doing it in the sun. I'm doing these amazing projects. And this stuff is filtering in to all of my insecurities and all of the things that I feel that I need inside. And it's got to be making me better, right? This is the solution that I've been looking for. And then on top of the, I had the work, the burnout. You know, I went to the doctor. They said, oh, we think you might have long-term work burnout, because I started to lose the ability to think and to operate. And there was, I remember, a really fun moment in the office. I looked at the big boards and everybody had gone, and I realized that I wouldn't have a day off for about a year and a half. And it was the first time in my entire life that I actually broke down and I cried. And after about 60 seconds, I was like, put your big boy pants on, man up, it's not that long, just dig in and get on with it. And all of the people around me had sort of constantly pointed to the fact that I was okay. They say, look, there's nothing wrong with you. You're just doing the stuff in the circumstances that everybody would do. And by that point, I was relying quite heavily on outside influences. So alcohol and drugs and pharmaceuticals. So I'm this sort of little shaky pill bottle of all of these chemicals that ultimately did work. And also a lot of the people around me, both clients and people within the industry, this was normal behavior for them. But there was something going on deep inside me that was having this catastrophic effect on my mental health. Everything was a chore. Getting in the car was a chore. Going to appointments was a chore. And I just sort of lived each day of my life. I used to think, gosh, I can't wait to die. I don't want to be dead. But if I went to the doctor today and he said, you've got 3 months to live, I would just be like, hallelujah, this is great. Thank you so much. Respite. And that became really normal for me. And the world that I built around me, it wasn't satisfactory for the support that I needed, both with my upbringing, with the experiences that I'd had through life, which were, they're not an ideal game book of experiences. And I also didn't understand nothing about ADHD. I'd been diagnosed with it as a child in that form of he's hyperactive. So I didn't get to attend school. I didn't realize until the day that I took the medication what the world was like for non-neurodivergent people. And it was like I'd walked around in a tornado in the eye of the storm. It sort of felt calm. And the tornado would go. I would follow the path inside the tornado. And at that moment, everything stopped. And the world looked different. And I could hear what people are saying. And I could do things without spending 3 hours procrastinating about doing it, which is not things I recognized anyway. It just took a lot to push me over the edge. But the time I did go over the edge, there were a lot of things that needed to be fixed behind the scenes. I didn't want to be medicated, and I fought this the entire way. I did not want to do it. And look, there's a lot of other things. I'm in a 12-step program. I've got these issues behind. I have to do the things that I need to do to stay well. And then a doctor said to me, he said, look, why won't you do this? Because I tried everything. So he said, how's your eyesight? I said, you know what? It was great until I was 15 and it's starting to deteriorate. You know, I've got to wear glasses for the laptop. He said, how would you have felt? He said, if you went to the optometrist and he said, oh, look, your eyesight's gone bad. Just squint for the rest of your life. And I was like, going to try the meds. And it's all, I take a stimulant medication because that's worked for me. And that opened my eyes to a lot of things. I realized I don't have the brain chemistry. I just don't have what most people have. I can't regulate dopamine. I've got this messed up noradrenaline stuff. And what the medication does, I've still got the same brain. I'm still the same person. It took a while to level out on the meds. It was a very, it was a long process. And there were points where I did feel like quitting, but it was explained to me, this is a really long process. And at its optimum, it just gives me the ability to use the tools that I've got in a really effective way. I'm a deeply troubled human being, but I'm also doing my absolute best with what I've got today. And then that helped me also see that there are very few happy-minded people in this world, very few. And for the rest of us sick souls and troubled individuals, everybody is all, they're just doing the best with what they've got today. I've not met a single bad person. I've met a lot of sick people that really need help. And through the understanding that I'm just doing the best with what I've got today, once I've got that awareness, I can take that to one of my platforms of support. And at various points of this journey, I've been like, I could be 5% on the journey, I could be 95% on the journey, but this is never going to be done. I'm going to evolve and adapt and I'm going to find new challenges.
You are so candid and honest about your experiences in the industry. Being that open, has that been a difficult decision? And what has the response been like from others in construction?
I think there's two variables on this. The sort of start of the journey in 2019 and sort of where I am today. So when in the early days, I started to realise what was wrong, I was missing a lot of work. And there were, and I didn't have a structure where I had privacy. So I had people, I had a driver, we'd created this sort of world where it is gossip, right? It's the construction industry runs on gossip. It's 20% Dewalt and 80% gossip. They're the two drivers behind us. So I didn't have the ability for privacy. So my reaction to not having privacy was to be really open, but I also had none of the answers. I went through a period of being, I got on with my own business. I did the best with all I've got every day. And then I got to a point where I could see a lot of the stuff in me and other people. So I go and see a client and we sort of get to know each other and they talk about a family member or as somebody in work or whatever situation. I don't tell them what's going on, but I talk about my own experience opposite. My policy with this would be attraction rather than promotion. So if somebody looks a certain way that I might say something and if they relate to it, I'll open the doorway to a wider conversation. And for me, that would be I put this stuff above everything. There will be the stuff that I do to stay balanced. Then there'll be my family and then there'll be work, and then there'll be whatever else is going on in the world. So if I was in an appointment and the conversation was deemed by me with my flawed judgment system to be useful, I would do that over going to the next appointment. And I would explain to that. The reaction from clients is really positive. We had about 3 weeks ago, we had the front page and the center spread of the Sunday Times. And that was about the journey that I embarked on. It was a project. It was the home with, I work with my ex-wife within this business. So we were together for about 12 years and we built this dream house, and with some sort of big hitters like Armani, Missoni and Molteni, these sort of big guys to reinvent the way that we do things. And we've got exclusivity on Gaggenau, so we were able to work with all these cool companies. And all of this stuff, the big bang was around this section, you know, where my life just fragmented. And I was quite nervous about the article. I had a lot of positive response from clients. They were like, wow, we didn't realize that we run the timelines, and we just didn't know that you guys were going through all of that at that time, and you still managed to deliver this project that got like this or best that. And I'd always been quite nervous of, will, if I let down my perceived veneer of I'm a highly responsible, highly capable person, how will the world judge me? Is what I'm not aware of within that thinking is everybody knows anyway, right? Because I'm just human and I'm not turning up for stuff. I found a lot of support, a lot of acceptance, but also the opportunity to be of service to people. Also, this is a very generational thing. So my peers are generally, they're older than me. So the people that I work with are either retired or coming to retirement. And then you've got the different generations that are coming through, and the difference in perception in this stuff is incredible. This is a really accepted thing. Speaking to the younger generation, sort of doing all of the awareness stuff and wanting to build these systems, I was like, oh my God, I'm a dinosaur.
So what are some of the practical steps that you think employers or site managers can do to help support that, keeping the door open, keeping those conversations going if people need it?
I often ponder this as an industry-wide thing. Like, can I be part of something to get people where they need to be when they've got these issues? The problems that come up in my mind are all of these things are so far-reaching, and they've got such external drivers that it's very hard to be able to say to one person, look, you can go to this one place. So my first point of contact was naturally, it was to go to a doctor. Now, at this point, I'm an active alcoholic, drinking more than one single human being should. But it's also doing something extremely different for me than it is for your average temperate drinker. And the best advice that I got was, you should stop drinking. And it was like, well, I'm kind of telling you that I can't. And so I got no help there. The medications that I was given would loosen the tension in my chest and my anxiety enough for me to be able to do more, which would then add more anxiety, and then I have to take more medication. Things like therapy, I needed to be in a certain place a long way down the road from being able to do with this stuff. And again, with the ADHD, in order to be able to understand what it was and treat it properly, I had to clear every other problem from behind it. Otherwise, I would have done that and it wouldn't have worked. And I would have ended up abusing that or taking too much or not having the things that I needed for that to be the most effect. So it's a really hard one to say, like, what is that first point of call? But I know from my experience, like, was a really big thing. And just having somebody to be able to talk to. So when there's people within our structure or people that I speak to, you know, events or things like that, I generally recommend people just put something into Google, you know, a symptom in, you know, and find a forum or a support group. I need to relate. We need the experience. It needs to have weight and depth. It needs their knowledge and their experience. It's just such a difficult thing because there's so much going on within this human experience, and there's so many things within our industry. So it's the sad truth behind this stuff. A ridiculously high percentage of people having issues with alcohol and drugs, and they're not going to recover. And I see this time and again, there's not the support structures there. And because all of these things, they're an isolating experience, it all isolate me. And this is the bit that's going to eventually this is the bit that gets people, you know, feeling isolated. So although there's no one thing that any one person can do, there's no silver bullet with this, and the spectrum is far vast and wide. That initial acceptance of, and I think it's really brave of you to say this, you know, just a really amazing first step. Given that bit of hope, you know, yes, that there are other things out there that can start to help with these things. But I think in terms of the mental health stuff, whatever that is, there's lots of really good charities. There's lots of support groups. There's lots of people to talk to. And if the mental health stuff has started to manifest in other areas, you know, it's alcohol, drugs, gambling, sex, anger, whatever those things are, there's also a variety of things outside there. And would never discourage anyone from speaking to like general practitioner in a health service. Just knowing that somebody said something to them once that might help is a really powerful thing.
What would you say to someone who is listening to this podcast and who might be struggling silently right now?
I think if you feel like deeply disturbed inside and you're really struggling with life, there's probably something going on. You know, you're using like things to try and fix something inside and it's not working anymore, or it's having a detrimental impact. There really is light at the end of the tunnel. You don't have to be like me. Like, you don't have to like all this stuff inside until you're 46. You know, I think if you wake up in the morning with a sense of doom, you're thinking that you struggle with your mental health, or you're thinking that you're struggling with an addiction problem of any sort, I would almost like 99.9999%, I'm pretty sure you are. You know, you don't wake up in the morning and be like, gosh, I wonder if my mental health is slipping. Then reach out. I think I always knew inside the little things that were going on. You know, I could have pinpointed in that moment. I should have said, all right, this is my actual problem. And although all of my actual problems were not my actual problem, the stuff that fixed it was not stuff around the problem. It was the stuff inside me. You know, it was my experiences, the person that I never got the chance to become. But finding the, I would have deemed the solutions at the time in behaviours or those type of things, starting to work on those things. So yeah, if you feel really depressed, if you're constantly anxious, if there's stuff going on, just to be able to reach out, speak to somebody in work that's had issues like that. There's generally somebody in our lives that's been through something that we think we might be going through. And it's going to a doctor and they can recommend the different support groups or the charities. But I think definitely if you think there's something wrong, there probably is. And it's probably a really good day to do something about it.
Dorian, it has been fantastic to speak to you. Really wonderful to hear about your experiences in the industry. Thank you for sharing them with us.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for inviting me and hope you have a mentally healthy day.
You too. Thank you.
Next up, I'm joined by Brian Berry from the Federation of Master Builders.
Hi, Brian. Thank you so much for joining us for the podcast.
Hi, Nadine. Really good to be here.
To begin with, how would you describe the current state of mental health awareness in the construction industry?
Well, I think mental health awareness is becoming much more talked about. I mean, people are talking about it in the trade bodies, the professions, and I think that's really, really positive. But I think there's still a lot that needs to be done. So I think lots of people are talking about it, but it's actually, how do we get it down to ground level? How do we get that down to the individual who is suffering? Do they feel comfortable about opening up, talking about their mental health, and who do they go to? So there's a lot more, I think, in terms of opening up the conversation about mental health and in terms of delivery. And I think things like Mental Health Awareness Week is really positive because it gives people the opportunity to talk about it in a more neutral space. And I think we are seeing some of the larger companies putting mental health policies into practice, and that's good, but we need a lot more work to be done on that.
Some of the statistics around suicide in construction are pretty alarming. According to recent ONS figures, construction has a suicide rate that is more than 3 times higher than the national average. So from your perspective, what are some of the biggest contributing factors to poor mental health in the industry?
Well, I think one of the big issues is the culture in the building industry. It tends to be a very male-dominated industry. Certainly on the tools, it's only 4% of women on the tools. So we've got a quite a male-dominated culture where I think people, men, find it difficult to open up and talk about the problems that they're facing for fear of being stigmatized in some way. And we need to demonstrate actually it's okay to talk about your mental health, to remove that stigma. I think perhaps for younger people it may be a bit easier, but certainly older men in the building industry would find that very difficult because of the way they're brought up and the way they've been conditioned. And let's not forget, it's only in recent years that we've been talking about mental health, opening up and talking about this. So I think the culture of the building industry, also companies not talking about it, they don't have policies in place. We are seeing a change, but a lot more needs to be done in making it part of the support that a company will give an employee. And then you've got other factors, of course, maybe in their personal lives, financial problems, in their families, and they feel they can't talk about it. That's the key problem.
Are there any unique pressures faced by smaller builders or kind of self-employed tradespeople that can make it particularly difficult to access mental health support and, reach out when they're really struggling?
Yes, I think it's really difficult for small building companies because they often lack the resources that the larger companies have. They won't have a mental health policy embedded into their company. I feel particularly when things get difficult, there's a lot of financial pressures, late payments, they're struggling to run a company as well as have a family life. Maybe there's a lot of pressures there. We all know the cost of living. So trying to balance all this out can be really difficult, and maybe they feel they're letting someone down if they are opening up about their own problems. So I suspect it's probably more acute for the self-employed and very small companies because of that lack of resource that they have, and also not having the opportunity to speak to someone, which you may have in a larger company.
So, do you think there is a growing recognition among business leaders, in big and small companies, that mental health is just as important as physical safety?
Yes, I do. And I think it's only starting to happen now that actually we're talking about mental health being equally as important as your physical health. So, until recently, it was all about protecting people on site. But actually, your mental well-being is equally as important because we know that the rate of suicides in the building industry is 2 every working day. I mean, that's astronomical. So I feel actually, the companies are beginning to recognize that they are seeing actually from their own perspective that if you tackle mental health issues, you're actually improving the productivity of the company. So it doesn't just benefit the individual, it's benefiting the company because you've got a mentally fit, well workforce. That means you're not losing days off when people going on sick leave.
And you mentioned earlier the kind of impact of younger people coming into the industry. So do you see the kind of younger workers helping to drive that cultural shift around breaking the stigma around mental health?
I do. I think younger people now are more willing to talk about mental health. They don't have the same hang-ups as older men do. They are wanting to explain that it's mental health is an issue. It needs to be tackled. We know that suicide rates are too high. We need to get that down. And I think that's encouraging that we're having this debate as we are today talking about mental health in our industry. And I think it will give older people the confidence to say it's okay to open up. You can have problems at any time in your life. You could be 20, 30, 50, 60, 70 in the building industry. It's okay to talk about it. In fact, you should reach out.
So can you tell me a bit about what FNB is currently doing to support its members on the issue of mental health?
So the FNB has been writing lots of articles, signposting guidance about mental health in our industry. But in terms of practical support, we are working with the Lighthouse Club, so which provides care, help when needed. So there's a phone line for anyone who is seeking help. And at any time of the day, they can contact the Lighthouse Club. And we are working closely, raising money for the charity. But also, when we have our regional events, we talk about mental health. We explain that this is an issue. Talk about it, share your problems, helping to remove that stigma. And I think that's the best way, going out to the region, talking about it, saying it's a safe subject, there's no stigma. And I know when I've been to some of these events over dinner, people will start talking about it. And that's what we need. We need that to cascade right through the building industry. Let's put it on the table.
Sometimes it just takes that one person to open up, and you can see that domino effect of others feeling more comfortable to be open and candid about their own experiences.
Exactly. It takes one person just to talk about it. And then I think someone on the table will know someone or maybe experience it themselves. And then the conversation takes off. And that's good, because we do need everyone to talk about it and acknowledge it. And sadly, you know, most of us will know someone that's had or experiencing mental health problems.
So just finally, with World Mental Health Day in mind, what's your message to anyone listening who might be struggling with their own mental health?
I think my key message is you're not alone. So please speak up. That can be very difficult. But if you want to speak to someone, maybe contact the Lighthouse Charity or anyone else that you think will listen to you. But it's probably best to speak to someone who is experienced to listen to what you're going through. And I know it must feel absolutely terrible for that person, but actually the first step is to talk about it, because there will be someone there who will want to listen to you. And I would like to say, actually, in the industry, we are talking about mental health. It's not a taboo subject. Everyone knows someone who's experienced some mental health problem in their lives. So it's sadly more common than you might realise. So it's not just you. Open up, talk about it. And you're on the road to recovery the moment you share that issue with someone else.
Great advice. Thank you so much, Brian, for joining the podcast.
Thank you very much, Nadine.
If you or someone you know is struggling with their mental health, please reach out for help. The Lighthouse Charity offers 24/7 free and confidential support. Go to www.lighthousecharity.org for more details. Mental health support and advice for CIOB members, past members and related family is also available through CIOB Assist at assist.ciob.org. CIOB, in partnership with Anxiety UK, also provides wellbeing support at www.anxietyuk.org.uk. If you would like to share your feedback on the podcast, you can email us at 21cc@atompublishing.co.uk. And if you're on social media, please use the hashtag 21cc to let us know what you think. That's all from me today. Thanks for listening.